Welcome to the Memora Health Care Delivery Podcast. Through conversations with industry leaders and innovators, we uncover ways to simplify how patients and care teams navigate complex care delivery.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Jamie Colbert, Chief Medical Officer of Memora Health and host of the Care Delivery Podcast. I'm joined today by Dr. Mark Townsend, Chief Clinical Innovation Officer at Bonsecours Mercy Health and Accrete Health Partners. Mark, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and sharing a brief overview of your background?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, first of all. And so I serve Bonsecours Mercy Health in the capacity of a physician leader of innovation, and I do that in partnership under the Accrete umbrella. Accrete is essentially the holding company that we use to curate our portfolio of investments. For example, Nordic is a wholly owned subsidiary, if you will, of Accrete through Bonsecours Mercy Health, Nordic being the largest Epic shop in the world. So shout out to Nordic. But yeah, so in this role, what we do is bring the proving ground of technology and innovation back to the health system and work together collaboratively in that space. But my background, I began my career as a med-peds cardiologist with the intention of being an adult congenital cardiologist before we knew what that was. And was able to do that beginning in academics. Very early on, I started building programs because I had to build adult congenital, for example. And that whole program growth construct turned into another job, which was my administrative career, which has lasted almost 25 years by now in some form or fashion. Entirely consumed my clinical career, saw my last patient 4 years ago, and my partners thanked me at that point because they didn't have to cover for me. But no, it has been a privilege to begin as a physician and then transition entirely to administration.
Tell us about the transition from being a leader in a healthcare organization to focusing on innovation. How has your career made that transition? Because that's not necessarily as natural of a progression. A lot of physicians over time move into administrative roles. They oversee their physician group. They oversee parts of the hospital or other clinical operations. But in your role, you're really focusing on innovation. You're looking at technology. And how did you move into that space?
Yeah, great question. And so as an adult congenital cardiologist, before that was really a thing, the story literally is that I needed tools in order to do my job. And I was the guy with the specialty that wasn't formalized. If I needed, for example, a module, we had just gone live at VCU with Cerner. If I needed an electronic health record that actually was conducive to treating congenital heart disease, that meant I had to advocate and then build it. And so I took that concept with me, got to know the CMIOs, the guys who turned into CMIOs, took that concept with me through leaving VCU and moving to community health. And as I did that, I had to start all over again, building the tools that I needed to do my jobs. For example, an imaging software that was used in my second program that I worked together to build. That imaging software is still used. It's a Frankenstein. It's hard to maintain anymore, but it is still used to read echoes for congenital heart disease. That's how I got into innovation. It was just the necessity of building tools. Once you start doing that, though, you realize that if you are a recognizable identity with the leadership of the health system, it's going to be so much faster. And so that pretty quickly turned into, I need a seat at the table so that I can build and grow programs. And then with that visibility, it turned into then you're a go-to resource for technology, whether or not it was in the early days, EHR selection for a health system, or then disaster recovery methodologies for our data warehouse, and building out the data warehouse, being the first clinician to put together a use case for a data warehouse 10, 15 years ago as we did our own build. It has just been one thing after the other. At this juncture, I don't do any personal innovation of my own, but what I do is work with companies as we collaborate and partner with them. And there is no pride of ownership at this point in my career. That makes me a critic of sorts, but I'm a constructive critic. So we work very closely with technologies to say, this is fantastic. And you know what? If you did a little tweak here, this could be so much better. And so any number of companies that we engage with are willing to partner with us in that space. And that is the beauty of Accrete through Bonsecours Mercy Health. Yeah.
So obviously Bonsecours Mercy Health sees a huge opportunity here in better leveraging technology to deliver care, to improve operations across the health system. What would you see as some of the top priorities for the health system as they look at new technologies?
That's a good question, Jamie. Yeah, following the patient care journey and using that as the guiding light for how we then wrap care around patients in their time of need from a technological perspective, then it really creates the human element of the fact that human beings can have their patient care journey made better by technology, or it can be made horribly worse by failures of technology, or it can be anything other than pleasing by virtue of the fact that you're forced to interact with technology sometimes, right? So it's that whole continuum, I think, that really compels the innovation space within Bon Secours Mercy Health. As an organization, we embrace it. We jump on in and say, let's do this. Let's figure out how to partner with companies that are willing to partner and collaboratively improve the patient care journey. But it's got to come back to the patient care journey.
Any examples you can share of either companies or specific ways that you've seen the patient care journey enhanced because of some of these innovative technologies?
Yeah, and that's the call to action, enhance the patient care journey. I'll just do the most recent two examples from the last couple of days. One is the sepsis patient care journey, right? If you look at mortality in the acute care setting, disproportionately it is related to sepsis. It's almost a Pareto effect of an 80-20 construct. And if you intervene early on with sepsis, obviously that's why we have the SEP1 bundle, right? So if we do early intervention, early recognition, code sepsis, then that improves downstream outcomes. Epic is obviously in this space, just released Epic Sepsis Module number 2, reacting to criticism of the first version. And it's still not going to get us there, right? So you see health systems trying to figure that out. And so partnering with companies that are willing to innovate in that space is a great example of that. Luminaire is out there doing some great things. Had a conversation with them in Nordic yesterday, and they approach the whole sepsis patient care journey from the bedside in the emergency department, right? Code sepsis, time zero, antibiotic administration, et cetera. We were thinking of it from the back end, which was SEP1 registry population, and then redesigning and rethinking that technological approach. We just took our concept, shipped it over to Luminaire, and said, hey guys, think about this. And so that's an example. Another example that may be closer to home for you, Jamie, and what you do with Memora is a pilot we've got underway with Brado, where we have built a conversational AI tool that expresses empathy. It's based on one of the Sisters of Mercy named Catherine from years gone by, but it interacts directly with patient caregivers in the dementia care journey. And so we've created this tool, Catherine, and Catherine is doing amazing things, interacting directly with patient caregivers. So then the next construct is, if we can interact with caregivers, can we interact with patients directly? Now that's where you're more of an expert than I am, and I'll defer to your expertise in that case. That in our health system, just pragmatically, starts lots of conversations with risk, and then a lot of conversations about, are we informing patient care? Are we delivering patient care? Is this really scary? Should we regulate this? And then you zoom out and say, what are we doing nationally? And it's still a question mark for the FDA. How is this going to be regulated wholly? And it's the AMA has said, let's just not call it artificial intelligence. Let's call it, what do they call it? I think augmented intelligence or something like that. Yeah, no, it's a fascinating space, right? Continues to iterate, grow very quickly. And there is so much that awaits us. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for the most part, clinical care organizations are not yet ready to expose patients to generative AI because we don't necessarily have the safeguards that are in place to ensure that, you know, the information provided to those patients will be fully consistent with what their physician or what their nurse would have wanted to tell them if there had been a person in the loop. But it'll be interesting to see how this changes over time. I think that there probably are pieces of that care journey that could be handled by a generative agent. And we're going to see this change probably quicker than we think. I will say, just from my own experience at Memorial Health, where we've deployed conversational AI across all of the major service lines in clinical care, we're at the moment using more of a retrieval-based method, such that we have natural language processing and AI to interpret the patient questions, but we're only sending validated responses to patients, such that somebody's reviewed the library of potential responses that could be sent out to a patient and gives you that safeguard. So at least for now, those are the checks and balances, but it also means that the universe of responses for the conversational agent is finite, right? And it's more constrained, such that eventually we want to get to a place where the conversational experience can be even broader, right? It can be even more helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was very well done. I know my friends in risk very much appreciate what you just said, Jamie. So thank you.
I also want to go back to a comment you made about Epic and the EHR, because I know these health systems are already invested in hundreds of millions of dollars in implementing, maintaining their EHRs. But there's also a recognition that the EHR can't do everything, or it can't get you 100% of the way there to manage patients, to engage them, to offload some of those administrative tasks for your providers. So how do you think about leveraging solutions outside of the EHR, and how do you make the case to stakeholders within your organization who've invested a lot in the EHR system that they should give it a chance to actually think about deploying something else that may sit on top of the EHR that's going to get you fully to where you need to get to?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that is a fun topic. A good buddy of mine in the space is Anish Chopra, now with Care Journey. But we went down this path together of after 21st Century Cures, which opened up the monolithic EHRs to third-party development. After there was the mandate that said third-party development is in fact encouraged to contain the cost of the EHR as we go forward, we together with Journey and the team from MedStar put together there was three apps that were not asking permission from Cerner or Epic to then go live, and were not certified by Epic or Cerner, really tested the hypothesis. We did this through an ONC LEAP grant in 2018 through 2020, but we developed a third-party application that was a bolt-on that used that definition of an open API construct, and we kicked the door open a little bit. Granted, the ONC was sitting at the table with us, and I won't mention the EHR by name per se, but they didn't really have a choice, right? So we turned on, and it's still being used by MedStar. So I'm a huge champion and a huge fan of third-party development. Hats off, for example, to Suki, who went out there and said, we don't have to be Epic certified. I'm sorry, Epic, but you don't have to certify everything. And there is going to have to be the space for third-party development, particularly as we move forward to address the future of containing cost and improving the care we deliver. Yeah, so the EHRs are awesome compared to what they used to be, and they still have glaring deficiencies. And as a clinician who's caring for patients, you sit down and say, this could be so much better if. That is how these companies begin. We recognize that we can deliver care more effectively, contain cost, and improve outcomes by augmenting the current skill set of these EHRs. And so I think that's very exciting. Yes, there is an absolute role for full integration with Epic and Epic certification. Yes, please, we need that. But we also need third-party development as well if we're really going to move the needle here.
I also noticed that you mentioned a few instances where your team was actually involved in developing technology. So how do you think about when to build versus when to buy as you're trying to advance your innovation agenda?
Yeah, that's a tough one. The closer that I have been to the development, that's where as a developer, I fall in love with not the problem as much as the solution. And I'm pretty darn sure I've got the perfect solution going forward. And so I've largely left that personal upfront, develop a beta, MVP, roll it out, be the first to do it. I've largely left that space behind. I'm too old for that, I guess, at this point. And recognize that for every good idea I have, 10 other people have had the same idea already, and chances are one of them has already commercialized it. And so I'm at the point, and this is what we're doing, through Accrete. This is what I do for my day job. We then go and find, for example, the sepsis solution that I envisioned, that whole backend SEP1 registry construct, and walked it back. I built out the use case. I brought on partners that were willing to build that. And then you realize someone's actually figured this out from the front end. So let's just give them our ideas and hurry this whole thing up, because innovation equals speed. The two are synonymous. If you can't do something quickly, someone else will have already done it. That's the space we're living in. And if you want to protect intellectual property, then you better implement it yesterday, right?
Awesome. So you mentioned Accrete Health Partners. Tell us a little bit more about the genesis of that organization. What was the impetus for Bonsecours Mercy Health to create this entity? And what does that look like in a few years' time as it grows?
Yeah. Our CEO, John Starcher, is very much an innovator at heart. For years, has curated portfolios of investments where through mid-stage investments, often not very large investments necessarily, but with promising technology, we invest. And so Accrete is the umbrella where those portfolios reside. Accrete then is also the vehicle for us to then, for example, acquire Nordic. And so Nordic, as it was acquired, comes in under the Accrete umbrella. And it is also an innovation space. We had a data team, for example, led by a wizard named Dipesh Chandra, who broke my heart and recently moved on to another opportunity, but he created a whole data analytics platform that we call Helix that was created through Accrete. And that is where all of our analytics for the organization now originate. And so the tools that are maintained, the 5060 tools that provide the real-time data insights, all come from that project. So that's how we use Accrete. We use it to innovate. We use Bonsecours Mercy Health as the proving ground for these technologies as we either develop them internally, now in partnership with Nordic, and we moved all of our IT personnel over to Nordic. And so Nordic is our vehicle, is our partner for innovation, as well as the keeping the lights on with the day-to-day existence of the health system. Yeah, so it's a fun time. It's a fascinating space to be in. And we have an innovative mindset thanks to our CEO.
That's really exciting. Do you have anything you can share in terms of what are some of the other areas you're looking at as you continue to grow Accrete and really expand that portfolio?
Yeah, sure. Good question. We start with AI, and we recognize that AI is a hot topic and we've got to fully engage, right? That's where we're spending a lot of time. We're also working to optimize care delivery. And so that's anything from containing the cost of care for some of our most vulnerable populations and rethinking payer models and care delivery from that construct. Anything from that to then saying, how do we make care delivery better for those who are on the front lines, which gets us more into improving efficiency and augmenting and empowering workflows through efficiencies gained through technology. So those are our guiding principles. And that is obviously a huge waterfront that opens up many possible solutions. But we've got to empower our people to be able to fully engage with ambient listening, for example, make their lives better as they're doing clinical documentation, both in the ambulatory space and the acute care space. We've got to improve our nursing workflows. They need to benefit from ambient as well, right? Not just the physicians. They are our largest clinical workforce. And how do we empower anything from staffing to then the administrative tasks of nursing? So it's all of that.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. And in my own opinion, as a physician, I feel like we've gotten through the phase of disillusionment and seeing that technology was not living up to many of the promises made when we rolled out EHRs, and feeling like we are now in a worse place in terms of how we're interacting with patients or how we're delivering care because of technology, to a new vision of a world in which technology really is being deployed to our benefit. And it's taking away some of those frustrations and some of those inefficiencies so that we truly can get back to doing what we love, which is spending time with patients and making clinical decisions.
Amen. That's the vision, brother. Preach it.
Awesome. I wish we had more time with you, Mark, but that does bring us to the close of our time today. I really appreciate your insights that you shared with me, with our listeners. And until next time, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Memora Health Care Delivery Podcast. For more ideas on simplifying complex care for care teams and patients, visit memorahealth.com.